become your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, October 26th, 2025, the 20th anniversary of the Chicago White Sox winning the World Series. In this episode, we continue our offseason plan project preparation, looking at the final position group for the Chicago White Sox, the infielders. Last year, so many questions about the White Sox infield as third base, shortstop, and second base were uncertain after the 2024 season. The only player we could pencil in last year was Andrew Vaughn at first base, and he didn't stick around very long. Fast forward to today, and it's a bit of a different story. Colson Montgomery has calmed fears with his impressive rookie debut to claim shortstop. Chase Mydrott at times was more than adequate at second base. Lenin Sosa is one of the White Sox top hitters in 2025. And Miguel Vargas actually grades rather well defensively at first base. But the questions that linger are what to do about Sosa defensively. Should the White Sox just stick at Vargas at first base? And if they do that, who plays third base? We'll attempt to answer those questions later in the show, but a World Series update as Toronto won Game 1 and Los Angeles won Game 2, which leads the series to Dodger Stadium for the next three games. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. Two games into the World Series. Jim Margulis, what have we learned?
We've learned that the Dodgers bullpen is still a mess whenever it has to pitch, and got very lucky up to this point to not have to pitch. But yeah, the Blue Jays certainly exposed that, and that's reassuring, I think, because that was like one of the most commonly accepted truths of the postseason field, was that if the Dodgers have to rely on their bullpen heavily, they'll be in trouble. And it just turned out that, you know, it's somehow in the year 2025, a team can get through multiple rounds of the postseason without having to really confront a weakness in the bullpen or high leverage situation. So the fact that it did and paid the price feels good as a baseball observer. Some things actually remain the same and remain stable and reliable, even if it's not reliable in the case of what the Dodgers want.
How about you, James? What are your impressions of the World Series after the first two games in Toronto?
Yamamoto can pitch, man. I guess that was already known, as well established, and he was having a very good second season and a much larger market than this one. But two complete games like in the postseason, and we basically don't even like think of that as like an end case scenario. The level of mastery of like off speed that he has, including like hitting 97 regularly at this point in the season with his workload. I think we've all wanted starting pitching to come back in some way. And obviously just like having one super talented guy is not necessarily like the vehicle for a change. It's kind of like the way I hear about like Nolan Ryan did this about, every single prospect. Maybe it's not always applicable, but just to see someone kind of establish this level of starting pitching dominance again is exciting to watch. And he's been the more like attention grabbing Japanese import for me in this series. Although, I'm sure Otani could make that flip that very quickly with the way he operates. So we'll see that home run he hit in like game one was very like, as someone doing like a lot of Fangraphs right now, we're evaluating MPB and KBO prospects who are supposed to come stateside and trying to like evaluate their like power grades without necessarily having access to like the exit velocity data we'd have stateside. Seeing someone clearly get under a ball but like easily get it out with the way he did, very not something you see very regularly, but it would have to say, watching someone like, there's a Sungmoon Song, it's a bit more has to get things right to have that sort of power. So very special tools on display throughout, which is what you want on the highest stage.
Yeah, for me, it's something that you pointed out in our previous episode, Jim, that Rodgers' infield plays very fast. And that was something that I was paying close attention to. And boy, yeah, some of those grounders are just like rockets right through the infield. That played a factor to keep innings going and keep rallies going, both from a Blue Jays perspective in game one and helping out the Dodgers in game two. Kevin Gausman pitched really well in game two. He had a good pitcher's duel going. He retired 17 straight batters before Will Smith and Max Muncy hit homers off of Gausman. So it was a tight game for game two for a while, but the Dodgers did prevail. And to back up James's point about Yamamoto, in four starts in the playoffs this year, Yamamoto has pitched 28 and two-thirds innings. He has a 1.57 ERA with 26 strikeouts and just four walks. His whip against is 0.73, which very impressive. And the bad news for Toronto is that if they want to win this, they either got to win all three games coming up here in Los Angeles. But if they don't win a game in LA, of course, their season's over. But if they win only one or two, they got to face them again. So he lingers still in this World Series from a Blue Jays perspective. They will have to figure out on how to hit Yamamoto. Your probable starters for the next three games, Max Scherzer will take the ball for the Blue Jays in game three against Tyler Glasnow. Game four, Shane Bieber against Shohei Ohtani. And game five could be a repeat of game one, Treya Savage against Blake Snell. So the question that I have here, and we made our World Series predictions in our previous episode, you both had the Dodgers in five. So Jim, I'll start with you. Does this series get back to Toronto?
No, got to stick with it, regardless of shape.
Regardless of shape. All right, James, you feel the same? This series ends in LA?
No, I thought, you know, the Blue Jays look pretty good, and certainly the Dodgers look shaky, but now with the way Jim's laid it out, I feel like a coward. So I just need to wait it out and have faith. I don't know. I think like the Dodgers offense just hasn't looked very viable outside of some outbursts and some, you know, defensive foibles a little bit. So I outside of just like the one game dominance, you can't really say like they've looked in control from, you know, Yamamoto. So yeah, I could totally see the Blue Jays getting another game in LA. That seems normal to expect, but once again, it's just cowardice talking. Shameful to
pay. That's like the Monty Hall problem. Like, it's better to change your answer if the initial door isn't picked in your favor. But yeah, I like bold predictions being right.
Okay. All right. I'm not feeling great about game three from a Blue Jays perspective. I don't know, like, how long you leave Max Scherzer out. And he seemed combative in his last playoff start when John Schneider was about to take him out.
You bring security with you to take him out.
That seems like SOP for Max Scherzer.
Yeah. And then Shane Bieber. Like, these next two starts with the Blue Jays, they're really going to have to lean on their bullpen, I think, especially in the second half of the game. They get five innings out of Scherzer and Bieber. I think they'll take it. Whereas Glasnow and Ohtani can continue as far as the starting pitching dominance for the Dodgers this postseason, get through six innings, seven innings. I mean, that would have to be the goal, because to your point, Jim, you don't want to get into your bullpen, even though that's Toronto's goal, to get to the bullpen as quickly as possible. Maybe they could do that against Glasnow better than Ohtani. And I don't know, man. I don't know about Blake Snell in game five. Even though I have the Blue Jays winning in seven games, I'm trying to figure out, Jim, out of these three, which one's the most winnable for the Blue Jays to get back home. And maybe it's game three. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not that confident anymore.
Were you ever confident, though?
If they had won game two, if they were up 2-0, I would still feel confident about the Blue Jays winning, but losing that second game, I'm shaky right now. Shaky. You guys let us know in the comments section at SoxMachine.com. Is this series coming back to Toronto? Or can the Dodgers starting pitching continue its dominance, much like the White Sox 20 years ago, and winning a World Series? But speaking of the Chicago White Sox, let's talk about our last position group for the offseason plan project, which again, that OPP will be starting soon on SoxMachine.com as the World Series ends. And then the day after, free agency begins. Baltimore has already hired a new manager. They hired the bench coach from the Cleveland Guardians. That'll take over. So we still have a lot of news throughout Major League Baseball, as teams will have to wait for the off days, or supposed to wait on the off days, to make those announcements. We still haven't heard much as far as the White Sox vacancies on the coaching staff and who is rumored or who the White Sox are interested in interviewing. But to start this infielder's review, we're going to start at first base. And like I mentioned in the intro, last year, this was the only position in the infield that we felt any confidence that someone was coming back, and that was Andrew Vaughn. And he did not stick around very long, and he really dragged down with his poor performance the overall season numbers for White Sox first baseman. When you take a look at the full season, the White Sox first baseman accumulated 0.3 WAR according to FanGraphs. That's 23rd in Major League Baseball. And WRC Plus was just 86. That's 28th in Major League Baseball. But post All-Star break, the White Sox first baseman were worth 1.3 WAR. That was good for 12th in Major League Baseball. And the WRC Plus post All-Star break was 100, so league average. But again, this is first base, and league average ranks 22nd in Major League Baseball amongst first base groups for all teams. So looking at the first base position, Jim, heading to the offseason, if I gave you the magnets and created the roster, in your opinion, who is the current primary starter at first base for the White Sox?
I think in terms of whose ultimate home would be best served at first base, I think it would be Miguel Vargas. In terms of the infielders the White Sox currently have and spreading players around to do the most good slash least amount of harm, probably Lenin Sosa, just because Vargas is more sorely needed at third base, and I think Sosa's play improved enough. Like going through the worst loss of the season, going through the months in a box, fewer just head scratching mistakes from Sosa over the last couple months versus like the first three or four, where it seemed like every series he was good for Will Venable saying, "We got to clean that up," or not sure what he was doing, blunt explanation of just why the processing was slow. So I think based on the way Sosa hit, he could get by with him opening a season there. But I think ideally, we'll talk about this, I think, in a bit as we get through different positions and what the White Sox want to be. But I think Vargas, the kind of first baseman, when you factor in the glove, could maybe be a first baseman on a good team if the rest of the infield shapes up. Whereas Sosa, unless he keeps improving as a hitter and this very aggressive approach doesn't backfire on him to where he can be an above average producer, harder to see him like being a plus guy versus somebody who gets the job done in a given year.
James, does Will Venable still enjoy having, I guess, that quote unquote flexibility at first and third, know that he can interchange Miguel Vargas and Lenin Sosa?
He enjoys it and the organization's in favor of it to the degree where I wonder if a positional breakdown will ultimately leave me giving a lot of like answers with escape routes that are frustrating to this entire exercise because they so widely covet that sort of flexibility and ability to not have the same lineup and tweaker. Not tweaker. I'm trying to do tinker and tweak at the same time. Maybe that does really accurately reflect the way that they change the lineup every day. But
tweaker and teak.
Tweakering around. Yes, to answer your question. My brain misfired because the answer to your question is yes.
Okay. I would, again, when you look at free agents and the way that he hit in this postseason, I would love the answer to be Josh Naylor. But James has already popped that balloon for me that the White Sox would not be signing a primary first baseman this offseason with the limited amount of funds that they have. And
also, I asked Getz about first base and what he said to you and how much they didn't seem to be saying, by golly, we need a franchise first baseman.
Yeah, that's what I mean when you pop the balloon of enthusiasm for me.
All right.
Appreciate you asking the question, though. Thank you. So with Lenin Sosa, if he doesn't play first base, I think just for him, like, what do the White Sox do here, James, with Sosa? Because when you look at defensive runs saved with the Fielding Bible, and I've been using this because the Gold Glove Awards are going to be announced soon. At first base, Lenin Sosa was fine. 0 defensive runs saved. Second base, dear Lord, -10 defensive run saved, so bad at second base. I don't think you could ever play him there again, but offensively, offensively, you still need his bat in the lineup. So like
ever again, meaning like as a solution or for like a game at a time, like two games a month.
Two games. There you go. To limit it to three games a month when Ian Sosa could play second base. Any more than that, maybe glove on chair would be a better defender at second base than Sosa. But like, James, what did the White Sox do here defensively for Sosa?
I mean, we're talking about what they do to accommodate a bat, which like obviously he's a lot better in the second half, but like a 100 WRC plus bat.
Right.
Like, what can we do to get in line? I think it's primarily first and mixing second. Their DH situation is probably too muddled for him to really get in there at this point, but I don't think they can really afford to take him out of the field, and I don't think they feel they can afford to just give him first base, and that's the only way to ever get him in the lineup, and like it's rooted in that position. Not that I necessarily think like a first base only masher is coming in, but like they don't want to get bogged down there and committed to one first baseman, because it's not usually like a great most valuable player, and certainly Lenny Sosa is not this, not yet at least, this sort of game-changing hitter where you can kind of just hand over that position to them. So they were certainly still playing him in second base in the second half. I don't think they view him as their better defender there, obviously, or even someone they want to have like half time necessarily. But for it to be a route for him to play 50 to 60 games, they didn't seem like they were on the precipice of closing that door. They'd probably hope that the DRS is a little bit extended or distended due to the blunders that are hopefully decreasing in nature and not necessarily as much of a reflection of his range. He's not good range. I think it's solidly below average range. Certainly some plays he's getting beat on end of the season, but he does have good middle infielder hands still to some degree. Like his mistakes aren't usually bobbles so much. Like they're more late to a spot type of slowness or just mental mistakes. So I think that they find like probably in the right situations, maybe if it's a fly ball heavy night, they're anticipating based on pitching or lineup matchup that they could still sneak him there once a series.
Okay. Was there any concern within the White Sox or any notion, James, with Sosa that they felt like his offensive season this year was maybe a bit on the fluky side? Like, are they confident like this is the type of hitter they can count on from Sosa if he plays 140 games, that he can hit 20 plus homers for us?
I mean, of course, like he's got a Javi Baez like chase rate, like his offensive approach is like insane. So like there's baseline skills of like he's clearly demonstrated power. Like Lenin said his post game interview, he's like, I hit 20 plus home runs. You count the minors just a couple of years ago. Why are people acting crazy? But like, he's always had good contact skill. The fact that he's able to like strike out at an unremarkable clip, despite swinging at so many things, reflects how good he is bat to ball wise. And the fact he's finally able to drive the ball are good baseline strengths. Like it's not like a fluke per se, like he has no ability, but like, because he chases so much, he can definitely like have, he's going to be streaky. Like he could, be really hot, or like, you know, for some reason people are attacking him in the zone and he could have like a ridiculous hot streak and maybe like have stumble on like 120 WRC plus season or first half or something like that. But he could also swing that far the other way just from like his diet has that much risk in it. So no one's like, there are English speaking players who are harder to get good quotes about how valuable the Trinect is to them than Lenin. So like, he's very much like aware of like what everyone says the central issue is and attacking it, but his numbers are what they are. He chases a lot, even as it's come down in little fits and situationally over the years, and clearly ways that allowed to be pretty effective of recent.
You know how we've talked about how like, some statistical lines are aesthetically pleasing or displeasing, like home run RBI ratio. When I look at Sosa's line, the first thing that jumps out to me is that his walk and strikeout totals each start with a one. Like, I don't know what you do with that. 127 strikeouts to 18 walks. That's It's unholy. It shouldn't be allowed to exist. Yet, like some creatures do, like some like that thing should have been extinct a long time ago, and somehow they persist in the right environment. And I think the plate appearance heavy environment that the White Sox provide allows somebody like Sosa to exist and even thrive. Does seem like somebody who could be pushed out by any kind of meaningful influx of defense. So he's asking to be replaced basically with his plate approach and also his defensive skills, but like
Yeah.
he's daring him to basically. He's saying like, come get me, and they haven't yet.
When Tim Anderson does it, it's changing the game and bringing fun back to baseball. When Ian Sosa does it, it's like, wow, what an abomination. Like, all right.
Well, with Tim Anderson, like his, or at least with Sosa, his batting average and OBP start with a two. So it's a case where, and also Tim Anderson played a decent shortstop. So it's a case where, like, yeah, Sosa's he's a survivor in many respects, and you can't I think credit him enough for managing to stick around despite everything saying like stay down. But yeah, just it's a matter of, will he evolve or will the White Sox evolve past him? And I find the tension fascinating because we followed him for a long time, from his humble short season affiliates that no longer exist origins, and it's cool that he has, but also just how many organizations could he thrive in? Is the White Sox his only possible home? And like it's hard to think of many others. Probably Colorado, obviously, just for he might hit like 20 points higher given the Coors Field outfield. Everywhere else though, if your job depends on like having a glove, harder to think of the amount of places he could get as many chances as he's gotten.
There's dramatic tension every time the game comes to him. He'd be an amazing TV character. I never know what's gonna happen to the scene. He's no like boilerplate villain or hero. Like
Wild
he
card.
could do anything.
Well, I can't wait to see what you guys do with your first base options. Again, Miguel Vargas or Lenin Sosa, we're thinking are going to be the primary options heading into when free agency starts up, but we are not expecting the White Sox to really invest any serious dollars to make an upgrade at
I
first
mean,
base.
they didn't talk him up a ton, and obviously didn't hit a ton since coming over, but obviously Curtis Meade played there a fair amount down the stretch and is out of options next spring, so they at least have some incentive to try him out or see what he's able to do over the offseason. I don't think you can predict him to like make 120 starts there at this point for what he's done, but
Yeah.
could be relevant.
I just think if the White Sox at first base duplicate what they did post All-Star break, where they finish with a 1.3 WAR, but they are combined everyone that plays at first base is a WRC plus at 100, and combine all the hitters have a OPS of, let's say, 719. That's not sexy. That's not desirable at a position that there's a ton of power across Major League Baseball, but at least if they can have that consistency throughout the season. I mean, Andrew Vaughn really, his poor play with the White Sox really crushed the unit's overall numbers, especially being worth negative 1.3 WAR. So I'm curious to see on how this works in 2026. This might be more of a 2027 problem if Miguel Vargas doesn't develop any more power and if Lenin Sosa regresses offensively. Then the White Sox may have to figure out what they want to do at first base or if they're going to maintain flexibility at that position. Over to second base. This was mostly Chase Mydroth in 2026. At second base, for all the players that play that position, the White Sox were worth 1.4 WAR. That was 20th in Major League Baseball. WRC plus at second base, 85 as a unit. That was 22nd in Major League Baseball. Fun fact, only 10 Major League teams had their second baseman carry a WRC plus of 100 or better. So that's how poor hitting this position is throughout Major League Baseball, especially in 2025. Defensive runs saved. Like I mentioned, Lenin Sosa, negative 10 defensive runs saved does not help this position group. But everybody else that played second base for the White Sox together, negative 16 defensive runs saved. That was 29th in Major League Baseball. Chase Mydroth was worth negative one defensive run saved at second base, and he hit 253 with a 329 on base percentage, but only slugged 320, Jim. And his WRC plus was 87. And again, this is a weak hitting position throughout Major League Baseball. I think Chase Mydroth right now is your starting second baseman for the Chicago White Sox to at least start 2026. I don't really see a need, nor the free agent group. Inspires of the White Sox should make heavy investments to improve at this position. But the question I have for you, Jim, is what does Chase Mydroth need to accomplish to settle the question that he is the White Sox long-term plan at second base?
It's a good question, because looking at his numbers before the last 2 weeks of the season, like, he looked like a league average second baseman. And then he finished the season 3-for-40 or 3-for-38 over his last 40 plate appearances, all singles. And he lost, according to Fangraphs, because you can sort by Fangraphs on a daily basis. You can't do the Baseball Reference, so I'm using Fangraphs. But he lost like 0.6 wins above replacement over the course of the last 2 weeks of the season. So he was 1.9 war going into September 17th. And afterwards, he was at 1.3, finished the season there. So it goes from rounding up comfortably to a average player to being a below average starter, kind of bench player. And I think it kind of captures the predicament he's in right now. I think he strikes me watching him over the course of a season where if he's your worst infielder, if you go into a season thinking like, you know, other three positions are set, he's kind of filling this role, you're in pretty good shape, because I think he's good at the basics. I think like he's a good number nine hitter, bottom of the order, can turn it over. And if he gets on, like, great. You know, he's setting the table for the table setters, and he fills that role pretty well. But I think like if you get in a position where he's got to be like your third best infielder, or he's got to be an above average second baseman, at least like glove wise, or at least some facet of his game has to be above average to carry the position, that's where I think it's murkier. So right now, I think that puts him as a bench player who can play his way into like a starting role and maybe a valuable one for a good team. But trying to project him, given like how he doesn't hit the ball all that hard, it's kind of more somebody who gets by on barrel control, but doesn't scare pitchers enough to draw the walks that you might want to see from him to get the OBP up. Yeah, it seems like he has to hit the ball harder. Can he? No. If not, can he defend better? Yeah, these are kind of the open questions for me.
Did the White Sox at the like end of the season, James, share any insight with you on what they want from Mydroth going to 2026 as far as like any progressions or things for him to focus on during the offseason?
No, they did not tell me their offseason plan for Chase Mydroth.
Jerks.
I mean, like, I don't think he's necessarily like a player they project to have more power or anything. Like, that's not really his game. They're probably like, especially with Colson Montgomery in place, like, shortstop is like less of a emphasis, I guess, for him. But they viewed him as kind of a high order like utility player for a bit now. So like, when you ask like what does he need to do to like be their plan second base, like probably put together multiple seasons where he like plays above their expectations, because I think like floating around 90 WRC plus or you know, looking better at second base but looking a little stretched with his arm and rushing some plays when you move over to second more often, I think that about squares with what they think of what he'd be on a good team. Like, as Jim said, like, if you think if he's like your backup plan, you probably feel pretty good about him giving you like major league caliber work, you know, wherever you need it. But they're not going to necessarily look at like this, you know, season and be like, oh man, there's like, I'm sure they'll expect him to improve in some bits around the edges, but like, there's this big other leap like we're expecting based on his tools and his ceiling and what we have for him. So like, I think if he came to spring with like a loft oriented swing or having super bulked up, if like that's not really a super protectable frame for that anyway, that sounds more like him going rogue than like necessarily what they're plotting out for him of what needs to happen. So I think like they view this is a really heady player who's going to continue to get more experience and get sharper with that and gain more feel about what situations where he can rush and make the play and where he has to eat it. As you saw him kind of like trying to prove himself at shortstop early in season, or maybe a bit more steady offensively in terms of just what the shape of the production is. But I don't think like there's a big, as far as like what he's good at, he did it at a pretty mature level right off the bat. And as far as his play discipline, as far as like how his defensive metrics held up, as far as his base running and like his intelligence there, like I didn't think he looked like a rookie very often in terms of decision making, in terms rather than just like speed of the game things at shortstop. So I don't think like there's this like transformation they hinted at the same way like they kind of hinted at with Lenine Sosa of feeling like he can get more refined or get better defensively, or seeing like talking about how there's more power in there for Miguel Vargas consistently. I don't think there's quite the same language around him.
Got it. So, in a perfect world, with the or the best world that you could possibly make, with the players on hand, Jim, if Lenine Sosa was a zero defensive run second baseman, you just have him at second base, right? I mean, maybe that's the answer. If you're trying to build out the best roster possible, Lenine, stop being ass at second base defensively, because if you carry your bat from 2025 to 2026, as I just mentioned, the White Sox could have a much stronger second base unit, because across Major League Baseball, only 10 teams with their second baseman are league average or better hitters. And that could maybe be an area where the White Sox see a jump in production. But I don't know if Sosa has that capability. So back to my draw, is anyone like Jacob Gonzalez? Is there anyone in the minor leagues, Jim, that's knocking on the door that could possibly challenge Chase Mydroth? Because you made the point about Sosa. Sosa's asking to be replaced with his swing decisions and how poorly he plays defense. If Mydroth and his ceiling is limited, is there anyone in AA or AAA that could challenge Chase Mydroth for playing time at second?
At second, probably not. Like Brian Ramos doesn't play second anymore. I think he might have been like other kind of third, second, go between, hitting enough to cover for defensive lapses as weaker position, but he seems like he's third base and maybe left field if they can get him there. But because of the injury he had early in the season, couldn't really do that. I mean, like William Bergoya is around as a glove first guy. He profiles more as like a true shortstop and somebody who's and he's got a very extreme contact oriented profile at double A, so it's hard to see him hitting the ball meaningfully different than the way Mydroth does, except with fewer walks. So you're talking about really like a batting average, BABIP driven profile for a guy who hits like one homer a year, if that, in the minor league. So I wouldn't necessarily count him as a challenger. I think Bergoya is more about if you need a shortstop who can play there, he can play there. And then just a matter of like how much do you need from his bat at all. Like he would be pretty much the guy if Gonzalez doesn't pick it up. Gonzalez is like, he just doesn't hit the ball hard enough in the minor leagues to cause a lot of worry about pitching him. Like it seems like, defensively he's fine. Contact wise, like you can put the bat on the ball. That's not the problem. It's just a lot of weak outs, a lot of just unremarkable contact that gets turned into, quickish outs. And so he just, nothing really goes anywhere with this game. So if he can somehow figure out how to hit the ball harder, like the way we're talking about with Mydroth, maybe he becomes a challenger or becomes like a guy who can be platooned in and out because he's left-handed. Otherwise, I think it's still, it's Mydroth's position to lose, and you just kind of roll into another year thinking like, well, let's see how he can further refine his game to where like he is now an average player. Like I don't think they're counting on him being like the a super glue guy in the infield who just, is like when you're up the middle cornerstones of, yeah, I guess that's kind of a mixed metaphor there. But somebody who helps everything come together. I think he's more of just somebody who, kind of like caulk, just like if there's a gap, like won't get too bad because Mydroth's there.
I mean, theoretically, like I would say consider Antonacci. I could see him weighing into the picture sooner than I could Gonzalez at this point, even though he hasn't been the AAA
Really?
yet. It's probably easier to see Antonacci like starting next year in AAA, and certainly is like done more offensively in the system than like Gonzalez has at this point. If you said like, is Sam Antonacci Chase Mydroff with a paint fetish? I don't know. That's not the most outlandish camp comp either, but it's obviously better to have like those are all useful players, so better to have two of them than one of them. I just don't know if like there's much differentiation other than like Mydroff's a better defender, or at least can be more up the middle. Like he can play short.
Antonacci takes batting practice standing on top of the plate, facing the machine. The thing with Antonacci is like I'm just not sure about his defense. Like, seems like nobody raves about it. It's just more a matter of like it's functional, but as he gets, I think AAA will tell a lot about just how he can be pitched, and if he still can't be pitched at AAA in a way that doesn't keep him off base. If his OBP still starts at the four, then it's a case. Yeah, I guess he does have to play somewhere in the majors just to see how far this goes. And I guess second would be the place.
I guess like in with Antonacci and all the hit by pitches, but also like Mydroff like was playing through like three different things at this point or at points last season. So like given they're both like penchant for self destruction, for the sake of the team, that kind of turns Chris Getz into like the what's his name? Bob Odenkirk character in the I think you should leave sketch where he's needs triples of like these like
Triples are best.
dribbles the best of these short utility players who love to get on base and love to hurt themselves for the team.
Well, I'm
I don't know if
glad the
that's
White Sox.
analysis, but I just wanted to tie that together.
Glad the White Sox have depth somewhere. So, again, first base, probably Leonid Sosa, Miguel Vargas. Second base, right now, Chase Mydroth. Shortstop, well, that's easy. Thank you, Colson Montgomery. Pre-All-Star break. White Sox shortstops, negative 0.0 WAR, 29th in Major League Baseball. White Sox shortstops had a WRC plus of 59 entering the All-Star break. Then Colson Montgomery gets called up, and he wields a torpedo bat. WAR post-All-Star break, 3.1, third in Major League Baseball. WRC plus 114, eighth in Major League Baseball. Post All-Star break, thanks to Colson Montgomery, White Sox shortstop position was a top 10, are you a top 5 unit in Major League Baseball? Clearly, James, that's going to carry over to 2026. Not I'm going to bother asking the question. We know the White Sox should have a top 5 shortstop. I'm kidding. We'll see if it could carry over to 2026 for Colson Montgomery. But the question that I do have, because Colson Montgomery is no stranger to injuries. If Montgomery were to get hurt, is Chase Mydroth that primary backup for Montgomery? Or is this an area for those participating in the offseason plan project to try to find maybe a veteran shortstop that can be that defensive backup in case Montgomery gets hurt?
I mean, yes, he that is what he's been serving as. I think his metrics there are pretty good, even if like I think his like errors can kind of accelerate when he's stretched over there. But I want to say there was a like a roster move late this season where was it Amaya when they cut again? Like Amaya's second tenure like ended specifically the moment like Mydroff got off the injured list because they just needed a backup shortstop on hand. So I think. Really, from the start of the season, especially when they allowed him to really play it all throughout spring training, Mydroff really started getting like both on record and private evaluations. Like, yeah, we think he could play there. So I think that's a big part of like what makes him, if not a regular the White Sox second baseman in the future, but a piece that has a role in White Sox team for years to come, is the ability to shift over there and be the defend shortstop and give them a bat they feel okay about because. Until really you get to like because Caleb Bonhamer is probably more of like your second or your third baseman, second baseman kind of range of defenders. It's not really until that like Billy Carlson or Lotis tier of like defenders who are just like very new to the system and yet to really like thump the ball and pro ball in some way that's measurable. There's not like someone who's really going to push their way into being like a regular roster presence based off like, shortstop position alone.
I think this is Colson's position at least for the next two seasons with the Chicago White Sox, Jim, because even when you add in the upcoming MLB draft, the White Sox, again, have the best odds of getting the number one overall pick. The best college prospects, even high school prospects, are shortstops as well. So suddenly the White Sox could have some really good depth throughout their system and even in the majors at shortstop. I bring up the veteran shortstop because we know that money is going to be tight for the White Sox, Jim. If this is an area where they can save cash, because like to your point about second base, if Antonacci or Gonzalez, like if Montgomery were to get hurt and the confidence is there, then Mydroth can play short. And if Montgomery goes in the IL, then I guess that opens the window for either Sosa or those guys in the minor leagues to step in. Like I'm trying to play out this hypothetical that could probably be realistic going into next season.
I guess Josh Rojas would be the case against signing a veteran infielder, just to sign a veteran infielder if you feel okay about the options. And that just,
we did call that out, by the way. We were wondering aloud, why did the White Sox make this signing?
Yeah, I think it would have been better if he didn't have the spring training injury. I think with the White Sox, like any injury, either in the off season or early on in the season that they try to rush back from tends to, blow up on them a little bit, or just they either overestimate the ability to come back, or the players are just fringy enough to where any kind of setback causes them problems, where a more talented player would just maybe have a rough couple weeks coming off it and then be fine.
The White Sox infield was like too thin to feel like they were protected from like one player just completely like falling off the map on the season. It just turned out that the one player who fell off on the map of the season was the person they signed to protect him against that, which
I guess that's good.
Still got to the proper endpoint, just not the way you drew it up.
But I guess, like, to go back to one of my old hobby horses is like, when it came to Brooks Baldwin, I'd like the idea of like playing him at shortstop when Jacob Amaya was playing there, just because, this is where the, appeal authority comes in and just think, well, if the White Sox haven't played him there, perhaps you really can't play there. I just saw him play a fair amount at Birmingham and thought like, he looks like an okay shortstop. I mean, not a world beater, but fine. And they just have refused to play him there. Like they only played him 43 innings. Like Vinny Capra played more innings at shortstop than Brooks Baldwin did. And, given how poorly he played the outfield, and, I understand, given that Montgomery came in and took ownership of shortstop, that I think the White Sox were just getting out ahead of having Baldwin be hemmed into a position where he's not going to be the guy for much longer. But, my opinion was play him at shortstop until you don't have to, and then just expand him out where then you can kind of excuse his inexperience elsewhere, saying like, well, he's hitting well enough, or we see a future for him on the team. We just got to play him there. So, had he played shortstop the way I thought he could play, like then he would be the backup shortstop, I think, for Montgomery. If there is like a recurrence of the back issue or a oblique issue or something that keeps him out of the lineup, and then you see how much his bat plays at shortstop. But, if he's actually not a good shortstop and he's just kind of mediocre at best everywhere, then perhaps like that argument works against me. So that's why I'm not too invested in it at this point. But going back to the whole conversation, like that's why I still think I would have waited until necessity demanded that Baldwin's utility profile be expanded, just because I think it makes it a lot easier to understand what his best thing is.
Makes sense to me, but again, the White Sox, I don't know. I don't think Brooks Baldwin's much of an outfielder. He might not be much of a major leaguer. I mean, he did hit for some sneaky power in the second half. We'll see what the offseason does for Brooks Baldwin. But knock on wood, Colson Montgomery does not get hurt next year. He stays healthy for the entire year, and the White Sox don't have to worry about it. Because when he is healthy, the White Sox may have found their shortstop, at least in the short term, until let's see who they pick in the upcoming MLB draft, and then, of course, Billy Carlson and how he develops through their system. But at least for the next couple of years, it should be Colson Montgomery's position.
Well, Baldwin had a 112 WRC plus in the second half, to be specific, about all right, sneaky power.
Yeah, like I said, sneaky power. Shocked. Moving over to third base, the final position, because I don't know what to do at this position for the White Sox. Maybe there's a little bit more clarity at third base than there is in the outfield right now for the White Sox, but this is a position group I'm not feeling all that comfortable with. Miguel Vargas is not a good defender at third base. Curtis Meade, James brought him up earlier about first base. I'm not seeing a whole lot there at the bat. So, Jim, I ask you, what are the starting options here? Like right now, if I ask you to fill out the 26-man roster, who is your starting third baseman for the White Sox?
Well, as you talked about, probably Vargas in a plurality more than majority, just because of the guys they can flex in and out. You know, the out of options guys, Mead, Ramos, you know, to fill in there. But I guess like to go back to like the thing I've been kind of circling around up to this point, because I think third is the best example of it. If the White Sox are emulating the Brewers in terms of how they want to be and not being too married to positions, if they don't have like a killer player there and just figuring out how to best patch it as they go, I think third base is the best example of that, because going back to the, I think it's eight seasons now, eight full seasons, 162 game schedules where they've had a winning record consecutively, Travis Shaw is the only third baseman who's been like the regular there in back-to-back seasons. And that was in 2017 and 2018. Since then, Mike Moustakas for a year.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Eric Sogard in the COVID year, Urias, Jace Peterson, Brian Anderson, like the not good one, I think. And then Joey Ortiz and then Chad Durbin. So they've been just flinging a whole bunch of guys a position, and somebody seems to emerge every year. Like they seem to take second base seriously, because that's been like their gold glovers every year, like their real infield foundations. Then like when Willy Adames was there, like they had their up the middle solved. But when it came to the corners and specifically third base, it's been like, let's get a power guy for first base, like Hoskins and then Rowdy Tellez, you know, Dan Vogelbach. They had Justin Smoak in the COVID year, Eric Thames, Jesus Aguilar. So like they've had like just at the corners, they just say like, eh, we'll find somebody more or less. And they seem to like defensive guys, if nothing else, at third base. They take second and shortstop seriously. But I think like if they're following this plan of trying to build a flexible roster that's invest the resources in the right places, you might see them kind of play third base by ear and see who wins it and not get too wrapped up, especially like when they have so many other positions to solve and so many other like just kind of filtering processes to figure out which positions are never going to get fixed and which ones need the money versus which ones, if we wait a couple of years and a couple of drafts from now, we'll have enough resources to handle it internally.
No, that's all right, Jim, that's a good point. You convinced me. All right, let's just throw crap on the wall and see who sticks during spring training. Is this an area as far as this offseason that could you see the White Sox trying to improve upon, James, whether that's free agency or trade?
I could certainly see them inquiring someone who can mix in at third base. I don't know, like as Jim said, I don't think it'd be under the parameter of like we need to find our Troy Gloss, our third baseman for a decade or something like that. But as far as like someone who presents that level of versatility, sure. Vargas certainly rated poorly at third base, but like he seemed a lot better over the course of like, especially from when they first acquired him. So I wouldn't think he could never be like a scratch third baseman.
That is a good point. He was better at third in 2025 than in 2024.
Like if we're talking about like defensive first views of how to handle the position, not like his bat it seemed ready for like a full-time trial, but like certainly Eric with Fangraphs and other evaluators love Ramos defensively. So like he's someone who could probably improve that position from that standpoint if they wanted to give him that any sort of rope compared to last season. That is the one spot on the infield in the second half where they put Brooks Baldwin a little bit. And obviously if he hit like he hit in the second half, that would be a way to like put him in some way where he can't, you know, knock over any fine china or any of the stuff he's doing in left field for whatever reason. So yeah, I could see like you could also find your way to like a pretty cheap like on the market addition for them. Like I don't know what Luis Rengifo off a down year costs or something of like that level of probably unremarkable thing. I think Munetaka Murakami is probably out, even though I think he'll strike out at unheard of levels in MLB.
What about Yoán Moncada? this guy we've heard
coming off a good season, strangely small market considering, still young ish. Never heard of him, but sounds good.
With Brian Ramos, I mean, he looking at roster resource, I didn't know this, Jim. He's out of options.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've
He's
been shouting this from atop various tall buildings in Chicago.
it's been fairly around.
He was one of the
Barely
players I think
around.
they had to add when they were adding players like a year early just to make sure. I think the Rule 5 draft probably has stabilized to where you know what kind of talent they're trying to pick versus like the one year where the Padres are trying to carry three position players and going nuts with like catchers and outfielders and
Yeah.
didn't work. But like I remember Mike Rodolfo got added to the roster like when he was an A ball because like any premium skill like they were trying to protect because of the way a couple teams went super aggressive. And I think now it's calmed down to where just like pitch characteristics and defense is probably, like versatility to carry a bench spot. But otherwise, like I think teams feel a little more comfortable not protecting players until they absolutely have to.
He got added the year where he made it up like a post 2022 where he had like just gotten to double A at the end for the first time. And I think him spending two more years there kind of put a crimp in his timeline.
So looking at my off-season plan project, I'm looking at infield where, okay, right now I think I'd move Miguel Vargas over to third base. I'd rather he be the primary first base, but I need to see more of what Curtis Meade and Brian Ramos can show during spring training, because if they look better offensively, I'm okay with them taking over third. Like to your point, Jim, I think Jim, you convinced me on how Milwaukee is handling it. But the problem is for the White Sox at first base, they really don't have a power hitting first baseman.
Yeah.
And my patience for Vargas, and we'll talk more about this in February when we get a chance to talk to him at Sox Fest, because he really focuses off season in bulking up and getting in better shape, because he lost so much weight when he joined the White Sox after the trade with the Los Angeles Dodgers. But if Sosa regresses and Vargas just doesn't develop any more power, the White Sox need more power. They need someone to help out Colson Montgomery here in the power hitting numbers. And if it's not Vargas and Sosa, like that's why I bring up Josh Naylor. Like, the White Sox have a need and he plays first base. Okay, now I don't have to worry about it. Naylor can help out in multiple facets for the White Sox. But I think this would be my last year of patience with Vargas to see if he can generate more power. Because if he cannot, then I'd like the White Sox to take first base a lot more seriously when it comes to power.
When
Yeah, I
he
think
talked to him in Sox Fest, he was wearing his jersey over a knit sweater. So he was talking about bulking up, but I couldn't tell if he's like had resigned himself to just use a lot of camera tricks to convince us he had bulked up.
it was cold. It was cold for him.
Was an impractical outfit.
Think with Vargas, like, he seems like somebody who should hit better than 234. Just when you look at his components, like just the BABIP's pretty low, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. Like the pop-up rate isn't sky. It's a little bit elevated, but not sky high. Just perhaps shiftable, perhaps like case where like his a lot of fly balls just end up just shy of the warning track to where like outfielders can position him better and not enough falls in. But that's something where even if he doesn't hit for like beyond 20 homers in the season, seems like he should be more useful overall offensively. And so like that's what I'm most curious about to see him in 2026 in terms of like maybe he doesn't make a huge leap in terms of power, but overall viability as a hitter, I could maybe see that being more the shape.
I can't wait to see your guys' off-season plans and what you have for the infield. Maybe you guys disagree with us and you think that the White Sox should make some investments or some trades to improve as far as this unit. My feeling is like I want to give them another run and see if some of the success post All-Star break in 2025 can carry over to 2026 because of limited funds. My primary focus after going through these activities: bullpen, outfield, and whatever cheap starting pitcher that you can maybe grab to be that fifth guy to help eat up some innings for the White Sox, at least to start the 2026 season. Those are the kind of the areas that I'm focusing on with my offseason plan projects. But again, you could disagree. Maybe you don't like the White Sox infield and you want to make some serious upgrades. Those plans are going to be launching soon. Do we have a definitive date, Jim? Are we going to wait after the World Series?
I'll wait to the shape of the World Series, see how it goes. Like if there's another off day, maybe then. But yeah, right now I think it's probably the end of the week.
Do you have a budget in mind?
Not yet. That's what I'm wrestling with. I like to be on the high side because I like to encourage. I don't want to set a low bar and say like Jerry Reinsdorf because he's reading it. I think that's what he uses. He sees like me set a $60 million budget. Like, yeah, that's good. That's all I need. So I like to shame him a little bit with the number.
Okay. Maybe in our next podcast episode, folks, we'll get Jim's budget for the offseason plan project. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen to the show and watch our videos. We've been uploading a lot more videos now on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. You could check out, as far as our catcher's review, we included some video and even some of the animations from Baseball Savant as well. So if you don't get a chance to listen to the podcast and you want to see the video breakdown of that position, we've done that. Go to youtube.com/Sox Machine and check out our videos there. Follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at Sox Machine underscore Josh. We are on Blue Sky. We're just at SoxMachine.com. James is JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. Also unlocks the comment section for you, too. We do have some spots open in our Veterans Committee, so if you want to join in the group chat, we just had a Zoom meeting with our VCs to share our plans for 2026 and have them chime in with feedback and the type of content that they want to see from us going into next season. So if you would like to really support Sox Machine and be more involved at Sox Machine, there are opportunities to do so. Again, go to SoxMachine.com and inquire within. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.